Ben Fred Fridays. It is a Friday, so the weekend is here, and Ben Fredrickson, despite the fact that the Cardinals are playing poorly going into this West Coast trip, will put you in a good mood for your weekend plans, and that's undoubtedly going to happen here. We're brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty. You can go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com, stlcriminaldefense.com, and their number. They are available 24/7. You will reach somebody immediately, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. They'll say, protecting your rights, defending your freedom, and stlcriminaldefense.com is their website, full-service criminal defense firm, and they are dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. It's state, federal, municipal courts. No matter how big or small the offense, they can help you out. So they have on their website some of the most commonly asked questions that are there. And it goes from, you know, something as simple as traffic violations to misdemeanors to order of protection, school discipline, juvenile crime. So you can find out more at stlcriminaldefense.com. Ben Fredrickson, let's talk about the St. Louis Cardinals. Big trip coming up before the All-Star break, beginning tonight right here in San Diego. And then we go north, way north, the Great Northwest to Seattle, interleague play, and then wrap it up in Northern California in San Francisco. Cardinals have dropped three straight. Let's start with just the state of the team right now. Where are the St. Louis Cardinals as you evaluate this team?
Yeah, I think you're being too negative, Dan. We should focus on some of the positives and the base running and all the good. No, I'm teasing, and I can see why manager Mike Schilt made a little bit of a filibuster, if you will, before the team played its final game in St. Louis. I think he made some good points. I really do. I think he's trying to stick up for his guys, and I think he's also going to get called out for some of the comments that he made, and I think he knew that too. But he's backing his players, and he's doing it when they're not, you know, the offense isn't working, and the starting pitching, while it has been good in some of the recent games, it's been a little hit or miss over the course of this past stretch, and he hit on that. And I think, you know, when you have starting pitching that could be good one night and not exactly there the next, and when you have a lineup that's really scraping and scuffling to score runs, then a lot of the good that you're doing otherwise is going to get overlooked because you're going to be, you know, getting shut out and you're going to be trying to win one run ball games. And that is a good way for good defense and really good, I mean, legitimately good base running, excellent base running to be overlooked. So I see to some degree where Mike Schilt's coming from, but I also see a team that is, you know, really not playing its best baseball and hasn't been for a while. They're 21-29 since the start of May. They're 12-11 since June, which is a little bit better. But you know, you look at some of the other numbers too. I was doing some math after the loss to the A's. They're 15-17 against the Central, and they're 20-26 against teams that are, you know, at 500 or better as of Wednesday night. So you know, they need to be a better, you know, offensive team. They need to get more reliable starting pitching, and until they can get those things, then some of the good they're doing is going to be overlooked.
What do you think is going on right now with Matt Carpenter and Paul Goldschmidt? Goldschmidt the other night, three strikeouts. Carpenter didn't start, did pinch hit. Tommy Edman did start, had a couple of hits. Seems like he could be a spark plug at various spots. But let's talk about Carpenter and Goldschmidt. What do you think is going on with those two?
Yeah, it's a great question. I keep telling myself I don't think they could be this bad. And, you know, the Cardinals don't really have a ton of options there. I mean, you got to, you know, I liked the idea of getting Edman in there and putting him at lead off, and he's a live wire, man. And I don't know how he hits like he does for a guy his size. He looks like he's about 12 years old, but he's been that guy since spring training, Dan, and you saw it, and he did it at Memphis, and he's relentless, and he's always looking to take the extra base. He's sound defensively. He can play anywhere you put him, and I think right now you got to go with the hot hand at the top of the lineup. And you know, I agree exactly with what Ricky said on the broadcast when he told you, look, Edman can be a spark, but he's not going to get you to, you know, a postseason run. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. And it's not a knock on Tommy Edman, but the Cardinals are not going to be a very good team if two of their most entrenched, trusted hitters are having career worst seasons. And right now, that's what Matt Carpenter and Paul Goldschmidt are in. They are in career worst type first halves, and it's not the start of the season. It's the first half. Something has to change, and it's got to be, you know, whether they flip the switch with being more aggressive. I think, you know, you guys had the numbers in the broadcast. Paul Goldschmidt is finding himself in terrible counts. I mean, just always behind, always with two strikes. And I don't care if you are one of the best hitters in the National League on your career, and he is. That's tough. That's tough sledding. You're not looking to do damage there. You're looking to survive. And, you know, he strikes out a lot, and we knew that, you know, when the Cardinals got him. So that's not surprising, but, you know, you've got to find a way for him to become more aggressive and to stop, you know, fighting from behind. And really, I think that's kind of this whole team. They're always fighting from behind. They're always playing from behind. And that's why a game, you know, where they come back and score a bunch of runs late and still lose is overlooked, because it kind of feels like the same old news. You know, they start poorly and then try to make everything up too late. With Carpenter, you're starting to see some signs of maybe him trying to do some different things. I think he's trying to use, you know, all fields a little bit more. We've seen the willingness to bunt, but he looks like he's trying to get back to maybe being that doubles hitter that we've seen in the past. But it's we're literally watching him trying to make those transitions, and it's painful. You know, these guys are dangerous, impactful hitters, but they are both in a bad way right now, and there's not a ton of signs that it's going to get a lot better anytime soon. And until they snap out of it, the Cardinals are going to be scraping. And it's kind of impressive when you think about it. And this isn't making an excuse, because, you know, look, it's all about the results and where they wind up. But you got to think they're above 500 within striking distance, and they've gotten career worst starts from two of their most important hitters in Goldschmidt and Carpenter. And they've also gotten, you know, nothing from Alex Reyes, and Carlos Martinez isn't a starter. And I think maybe that's kind of what, if you could put the Schilt translator on those comments, I felt like what he really wanted to say is, look, guys, you know, we're talking about, you know, some losses here and some play that's not screaming great, but I think we're in a pretty decent spot. And I think we played pretty decently for the fact that, you know, multiple players in this lineup are at career worst levels. And the fact that the guys that we were counting on for this rotation and this bullpen, so a lot of them aren't here. And I don't think he wants to throw individuals under the bus, but he sounded like a manager who's trying to talk around the fact that guys who are going to have to, you know, play better soon for this team to get where they're going to go are not there yet. You know, I don't think it's for lack of work or want to, but something's got to change. And, you know, maybe it is the kick in the pants this team needs. I don't know what it is, but it almost seems like this team is waiting for something to happen. And that's a good way to wind up waiting, you know, for the season to come down to a wire and winding up on the wrong side of it, as the past three teams that, you know, the Cardinals have had do. Something's got to change, whether it's a player emerging like a Tommy Edman, whether it's a trade, whether it's an addition. But this same old thing is kind of how the Cardinals feel. And it's not getting them where they need to go, especially not against softer opponents that they were supposed to make up ground against.
Absolutely. Ben Fredrickson, every Friday on the website, scoopswithdannymac.com, is brought to you by Henderson Water Cutty, and you can see their website at stlcriminaldefense.com. Well, you can wait for those things to happen, but sometimes you get some losses along the way, and the Cardinals got a big blow this past week. Jordan Hicks, Tommy John surgery, so remainder of this year, I don't even include him for next year, so you're talking about at least a year and a half. At least that's the way I look at it, with the way that some of these Tommy Johns go. And he's an elite pitcher, hardest thrower on the planet, literally. So I would assume that they'd be overly cautious with him. But that's a tough blow, obviously, seeing Jordan Hicks go out in the back end of your bullpen. So the question is, how big of a blow is it, and what direction then should the Cardinals go if indeed they feel that they need to make a deal and try to improve this club?
Yeah, and I think they do have to add pitching now sooner rather than later.
So the question is, would be relief or starters?
Starter, I think, because I think you add the best starting pitcher you can get your hands on, the best starting pitcher you can pry away from another team, and then you kind of let the trickle down take effect. You move someone to the bullpen that makes the bullpen stronger, and you boot your weakest link. Now, it's easy to say, it's harder to do, because nobody wants to make that trade right now. There's not a team out there that wants to say, hey, oh, by the way, we're giving up on the season and trading one of our starting pitchers. But, you know, the Cardinals cannot sit around and wait. They need to press this issue, I think, because, you know, you look at the rotation and it's gotten good performances at times. Dakota Hudson has clearly been great. Adam Wainwright has been a lot stronger than people want to give him credit for, but you're still kind of toggling that what if of Michael Wacha and or Daniel Ponce de Leon. I think they need to strengthen the rotation by adding a starter. They've had too many guys go down, whether it's Carlos Martinez, Alex Reyes, John Gant has been excellent, all-star worthy in the bullpen, but he's not going to move back to the rotation. We hear a lot about Jake Woodford, but the Cardinals are reluctant for whatever reasons to move him to the 40 man. They need to add somebody who can help this rotation. And by doing that, strengthen the bullpen. Now, that's easy to say, harder to do. Who are the names? Well, ideally it would be Max Scherzer, right? That would be amazing. I don't think Washington is ready to let him go yet. And what that would signify? I mean, Zach Greinke's going to get mentioned. Madison Bumgarner is. I'm a little worried about a guy like Madison Bumgarner just because he hasn't pitched all that much the past 3 years. I don't think he's pitched more than 130 innings the past three seasons. And you'd get him about, you know, he's about 100 right now. So can you trust that he's going to be healthy? One guy that I think is really interesting is Marcus Stroman in Toronto. They're not playing very well. Could he be moved? He's under, you know, cost control. It would cost more prospect-wise to move him. Trevor Bauer is a name that I think is really interesting. He kind of has that edge, maybe that grit that the Cardinals could use, or it could be, turn out terribly. The other guy, too, and I wonder about this as the Mets go down the, go down the tubes, are the Mets starters. You know, Jacob deGrom or Syndergaard. Would they be willing to turn the page on that group, and as they, you know, have a manager who's trying to fight reporters and chaos in their clubhouse, would they sell off? Because there would be a lot of people interested in those guys. But add a starter, make it a good one, and strengthen the staff as a whole from doing that, I think.
What was your takeaway from the Pujols weekend?
Awesome, man. I thought it was really cool. I think it's a credit to the fans. I can tell you personally, just watching, you know, being in the same room as Albert when he was talking about it, that he was emotionally moved by it. You know, tears, trying to hide tears. Really cool to see, you know, see its effect on Yadier Molina. And I think it was just kind of one of the few moments that are bigger than the outcome of a game. Baseball is such a sport that demands, you know, it's about the game, respect the game, and it's about competition more than anything else. But there are a few moments that are a little bit bigger than that. And I think that was one of them. It was also interesting to me, Dan, I'm curious if you noticed this, the effect that it had on the current Cardinals. Because only two of those guys, Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina, had played with Albert Pujols before. And I think the younger guys, they obviously know Albert. You know, they've been taught what he meant to the organization. But until you really see that, you don't know. And it was funny, kind of funny to hear the players talk about, man, that was surprising to see Michael Wacha getting booed when he walked him. And goodness, there's another level there that those guys did not really know existed. And I wonder, you know, if that's something that, if it's channeled right, I think it can be a motivating factor for this team. I mean, they're not going to bed tonight thinking, I want to be Albert Pujols, but they've seen guys who win World Series acknowledged here. They know that there's that upper tier. And this team, you know, should be full with young guys who are hungry to be at that level one day.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again, and really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. STLCriminalDefense.com. Check it out. That's STLCriminalDefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements. Let's switch gears. We're going to touch on the Missouri Tigers. We're going to get into MLS and also the St. Louis Blues, and the offseason is here. For Missouri, the postseason ban, I know you're connected down there in Columbia. What are you hearing about the postseason ban being potentially lifted for Mizzou and the athletic program in the upcoming season?
Well, Mizzou feels good about its chances, and that's kind of really all they can say at this point. You know, they have not yet had the hearing with the appeals committee that will be coming up here in the near future, but they feel like because of the way that appeals committee is composed, they'll have a good shot. Now, the important thing to remember here is that the group that handed down the penalty, with the main one being the postseason ban for the football team, and other penalties that really hurt other teams, but, you know, focus obviously is going to be on football and the SEC. That's just the way it is. The group that handed that penalty down was not the same group that did the investigation. These are completely separate bodies within the NCAA. And Mizzou felt like, man, how did we have, we felt like we had a pretty good idea of what was coming from the group that investigated, that group that we cooperated fully with, and did not match the punishments handed down. So that was disappointing to Mizzou. Now, the good news, the silver lining potentially, is that the appeals committee is a completely different body. That's a third body within the NCAA. And I think Mizzou feels like it's comprised more of people who are more receptive, of people who may or may not be trying to make an example, of people who may or may not be trying to make a name for themselves. I feel like they think that it's going to be a more fair to their interests group, and they feel good about the chances. Now, the question is when. When will this be decided? Because the hearing doesn't exactly mean that it's settled. I mean, there's time then before the decision is made. The season could very well start, and this is hanging over the head of these players. Now, they have a good start to their season in terms of scheduling. They could very well be undefeated playing under this cloud of speculation about whether or not they're playing for the postseason. So then you can imagine the drama of if it comes down their favor or if it comes down against them, of how that will impact things. So they're aware of that potential reality. I don't think they're dreading it too much, because it's out of their hands. They feel like they've got a very good case for the appeal, and they think like they're going to, you know, make their case and live with it, whichever way it goes. But I think they're optimistic that folks are going to be more receptive to their argument than the enforcement committee was on the penalty.
Carolyn Kendall Betts, spearheading the effort with Jim Cavanaugh, went to Twitter on Wednesday and made this announcement to fans that are interested in soccer coming to St. Louis.
With the Blues' historic season behind us, I thought I would take this opportunity to update you on the MLS for the Lou efforts. With the commissioner announcing that the league would be going to 30 teams back in April, the ownership group and team have been working tirelessly behind the scenes to make sure we keep pushing forward to win that MLS team. Between stadium design, working with the city and state for site control, working to secure those corporate partnerships, and certainly doing what we can to keep fans engaged, we've been a busy group. I look forward to having more updates in the weeks to come, but until then, thank you for all you do to help this ownership group bring a Major League Soccer team back home to St. Louis.
Well, one of the things, obviously, that they want to do is stay somewhat in the on the front pages if they can, with the Blues doing what they did. They did not want to take away from that. The Cardinals in full swing in their season, and now more attention will be paid towards Carolyn and Jim and the ownership group and MLS coming to the Lou. What is the latest that you've heard about MLS for the Lou and coming to St. Louis?
Yeah, I think they were realizing a lot of folks are now going, hey, that soccer thing's still going on now that the Blues are over. We got to get something out there. And it was smart to give folks a little bit of an update as much as they could. It's kind of all silent on the soccer front, both here and in Sacramento. I think that's kind of governed by MLS. But what's going on is they're working toward, you know, finalizing the transfer of land from the federal government to the city. That's undergoing, and they're preparing for this meeting with the expansion committee. They've got a date set. They feel like, you know, it's coming up with this next month, and they're going to have a chance to present their case. Now, it's not going to be something that the league hasn't heard before, but they want updates. You know, Don Garber has been here, and one of the things that I think the group feels really good about now is these sponsorships. That was really something that Garber stressed when he talked about, you know, wanting to see the commitment from the corporate side. And he was really floored by the amount of people that showed up to that lunch where they brought him into town and all the different investors and folks who want to see this happen. And I think the group has strong proof to take to the league to say that, hey, you guys award us with a team, then we're going to have, you know, this sponsorship locked up. And here's the agreements, the tentative agreements that we have in place, the commitments that we have in place. So those are things that are all moving in the right direction. I think the next round of things will include something like a more formalized renderings. And I know people love to see the stadium photos and things of that nature. And they're becoming more specific as they work toward what this is going to look like. So kind of as Carolyn said, I think there's a lot of work being done. We keep pestering them. I know I do, for updates and what can be out there and what they can officially tell us, and, you know, trying to bend their arm to get us to confirm dates and things of that nature. And they're playing it pretty close to the vest, but it's also because the league is telling them to. So I know they feel confident. I know they feel like things are moving and speeding along. And there's been some, you know, speculation that this decision could come down during the MLS All-Star game, which is the 31st of July. And I'd press pause on that just a little bit. I think, you know, those are being taken away from comments from Don Garber, where he said he'd like to have a decision made around that time. And a decision made around that time is not the same as the league announcing which team is going to, you know, which teams are going to be part of the expansion group. It could come after that. It could come then. I just don't know that that's a guarantee. So I would caution folks from assuming that. That sounds about in that range where some things are going to be happening.
Absolutely. And you know, if we've learned anything from the Blues run, and we've seen it with the Cardinals, is that this is a remarkable sports town. And I would just encourage anybody that's on the fence with this, go and dive in the numbers. They're incredible of what the ownership group is willing to spend to bring soccer to St. Louis. And for any politician that's trying to block it, I wouldn't agree with that either. I think you need to look at it hard. This is what we do. We do sports, and we do it well, and it's supported well, as long as fans know that the owners care about winning and the city. And clearly these people have shown that, in my opinion.
Well, I think too that one of the things to keep in mind here too is that the Board of Aldermen they didn't approve everything that needed to be approved for the stadium, but they did stand up pretty much in unison and say, we support this. And if it comes in the format that we think it will come in, that the ownership group has presented, then we're going to be in favor of it. So that was a pretty surprise, not surprising, but pretty overwhelming majority of folks who saw it that way. So it would be, I think, in some ways problematic if it wasn't the case now that it's closer to fruition. So there's going to be politicking. There always is. Nothing is easy. and that's always, you know, especially more so the case in St. Louis. But as I look at this, I don't see a lot of reasons to say, oh man, you know, this is a reason to press pause. And the other thing that gets lost in this conversation sometimes too, when it comes to debates about, you know, taxes and what do they charge for, what are they not, things of that nature. One thing to keep in mind is what it is right now. And what it is right now is a whole lot of nothing. That's not generating any money or interest or activity for anything. So it's always smart to remember what you're comparing something to, a project versus a non-project.
Finally, the Blues. Let's get into a little bit of what's happening with them. They've got some business now to do. Pat Maroon, free agent. Jake Allen, what do you do with him? Bennington is the number one going forward. And other question marks as well. Carl Gunnarsson is another one that's out there. Where do you think the Blues stand right now and starting to conduct business for 2020?
Well, I like that they got their head coach locked in. I was starting to get a little antsy about that. I didn't think there was any question that Brubie was going to be on the move, but contract took, I think fans were getting a little nervous. So he's in on a 3-year deal, and my goodness, prospect camp is already underway, which is, it makes your head spin how fast hockey season is coming back. But the Blues do have some tough decisions to make. And, you know, let's start in goal. They've got to, I think, you know, want to keep Jake Allen around. And how do they do that? Is it a bridge contract, a long-term commitment based off one season? That's a dicey situation. You know, you've got to play that right. We've seen a lot of goalies who are really good for 1 year and then not, you know, after that. But I don't know how you don't commit to Jordan Binnington based off what you saw. Then what do you do with Jake Allen? And there's a, you know, there's a guy who was an awesome teammate this year. He was more willing to help Jordan Binnington. I think a lot of people would be, if you asked them, you know, put the truth serum in them, that's how much would they help the guy who took their job. He was amazing. Now, can he do that for, does he want to do that for more than one season? I don't know that I would. That's a tough assignment. Is there a trade opportunity out there for him? Does he want to be traded? He's getting paid a lot of money to be a backup. So how could that work for the Blues? And then it comes up, you know, the next one for me is what do you do with a guy like Pat Maroon? He came on a 1 year deal, took the hometown discount, could have made more money elsewhere. Now he won the Stanley Cup. Now, is that what he came back to do? And now he's ready to go try to get paid? Or did he fall in love with this idea of being in St. Louis? He's closer to his son. You know, he loves being able to be a full-time dad. And does he want to put, you know, and that's a tough call for a guy to make, you know, finance versus being closer to family. And how does that affect things? I think that's a big thing. Who wouldn't want to see Pat Maroon back? But if he can make more money elsewhere, then it's hard to turn that down when you can only play so many years too. That's a big question, I think. And then, you know, some of the other guys are tough. You know, you look at a guy like Carl Gunnarsson, who, you know, scores a huge goal in the postseason. He has the epic moment with Craig Berube at the urinal, and he's a great part of this postseason story. But at some point, you're going to have to move on without some of these guys and turn some opportunity over to some younger, more cost-effective guys. And a guy like Carl Gunnarsson, it might not be the reality that he's with this team next year.
What do you think happens in terms of Pat Maroon? I mean, the hometown hero, he's at the Blues game on Wednesday night. So much fun to watch him. What do you think happens with Pat?
I was just glad to see him not drinking. I think he made the joke about being in detox. It's just funny. But that to me is one of the biggest mysteries, because, you know, the Blues have made hard decisions before where they've let beloved players leave. And, you know, you go to a guy like David Backes, and we thought they were crazy. I mean, I did, for letting David Backes leave, and it turned out to be a really smart move. I think you got to try to take feelings out of it. But I think a lot of this might boil down to what Maroon wants. If he's willing to take another 1 year deal, if he's willing to say, look, I've accomplished my professional dream, and there's no way I'm leaving this team now. So find a way to make me a part of it, and I'll be happy to be here. Then that's a different story than if he's, you know, looking to maximize this good year that he had and turn it into his biggest financial gain. So I think a lot of that's going to be what he wants and how he views his career. I think, goodness, I know Blues fans would love to have him around. I was actually getting gas today, and there was an old beat up car that had blue and yellow paint on it that had Maroon and his number painted on the side and his name across the back. I mean, that's how love, when people are painting their cars to look like yours, then I think they want you to stick around.
I would say that's probably right.
I think I've seen a Danny Mac mobile or two rolling around downtown on game days.
Oh yeah. I mean, and they probably picked it up at Lou Fuse.
Oh my God, you're shameless.
I am proud to add to the website as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients And this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. STLCriminalDefense.com. Check it out. That's STLCriminalDefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Final thought now. The Cardinals head on this road trip. Just give me what you think needs to happen with three teams that, you know, I know you're on the road. I know it's a long trip. I know it's three cities. I know it's 10 days. But what are your expectations going through San Diego, Seattle, San Francisco?
Well, it's the hockey cliche at this point, right? Your star players have to be your star players for the team to be the best team. I mean, it's coming to the point where what are you going to do with Matt Carpenter if he doesn't hit? I don't know. He gave the guy an extension. It's not exactly a great situation at the moment. I mean, you've given Paul Goldschmidt an extension, and he looked, you know, obviously frustrated his last game out, and something's got to either break through for these guys, or you feel like something's going to break. The other thing too is, you know, at what point, I think it's fair to say to the front office, at what point have they seen enough where they need to start trying to add to this team or trying to shake some things up with this team? It's clearly the current concoction is not that far off from being very good. I'm not one of the people screaming that the sky is falling, but I do think we've seen a pretty significant sample size here that this team is not going to win this division as is. And certainly not with some key players underperforming. Now, you're not going to do anything that goes out and gets you a Paul Goldschmidt type player. You need Paul Goldschmidt to be Paul Goldschmidt. But there are some areas where you can improve. And I think that pitching idea that we talked about, you know, I know it's not easy to make deals right now. It really isn't, because teams don't want to send that message. But what can the Cardinals do to try to strike here and try to not be, you know, just waiting for the trade deadline? I think this team puts itself in a bad spot if the Cardinals just end up waiting and waiting until that trade deadline comes with a chance to improve. And there really should be no debate about that they're trying to improve. I mean, the Cardinals put themselves in the spot before this season where, you know, the 2019 Matters tagline became something that was going to hang over this team's head for better or for worse all season. So there should be no discussion about are they going to sell or could they look to – no, they need to go out and become a better team. They are within striking distance for the division still, as Mike Schilt pointed out. So find a way to improve in the areas that can be improved. If there's a way to do it in the lineup, great. I don't see an easy way right now. Other than you just hope your best guys become your best guys. But I do think pitching is a place that can be improved. Another thing too, before I shut up here, I hear a ton of questions of people, you know, talking about what's wrong with Harrison Bader and what's wrong with Colton Wong. And these are fair topics, but when Paul Goldschmidt and Matt Carpenter are hitting like Harrison Bader and Colton Wong, that's your problem. Okay, so everything else is coloring around the edges when it comes to the offense.
My man, great stuff. Thank you. We'll talk next Friday.
Sounds good, buddy. Travel safe and get back home soon.